Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The mistletoe margarita, the screwdriver, the North Pole punch. The holidays call for cocktails, so get everything you'll need for them delivered with Drizzly, the go-to app for drink delivery. So
what's it gonna be?
Classics like Bullet Bourbon, Don Julio Reposado, or Kettle One, or maybe something new. Find it all on Drizzly, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered for any holiday festivity. Download the Drizzly app or go to drizzly.com. That's drizly.com today. Must be 21 plus, not available in all locations.
At Sleep Outfitters Outlet, great sleep is a big deal. Save 40 to 60% every day on every Sealy, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. Queens as low as $249. Customer exchanges, closeouts, and floor samples. Inventory changes daily, so come in for your dream deal today. With no credit needed financing, expert advice, and up to 60% off retail, it's never been easier to get the sleep and savings you deserve. Go to sleepoutfittersoutlet.com for financing details and to find a store near you.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
In part two of this podcast with director Steve Barron, he talks more about Michael Jackson and his creative input, also meeting and being the first video director to work with Madonna, the Take On Me video, which launched Aha, and also his life as a film and series director. But first, he talks about how it is working with a band and his experience with the Human League on Don't You Want Me.
There was a number of videos that were a little political like that. There was this slight resentment towards it, you know, the video seemed to play the person singing the song and leaving everyone else as a supporting act. And yet the band often, were much more collaborative and even sharing in their writing and their studio recording and everything. And so I think there was a natural amount of resentment towards the lead singer, unless they were a band that were comfortable in their own skins and they just knew where they stood. But often we'd get that brief from the record company, and only that brief is like, kind of, can we need to share a bit with the band, because they didn't want the politics of kind of band saying we want those shots put in afterwards, because you could usually guess that you're cutting to someone once too many times. So yeah, there was politics, and what I tried to do with the idea for Don't You Want Me was do a film idea where there were relationships going on. The song was suggesting that as well, and there were relationships on camera and off camera and behind the scenes and within the film and the film within the film, and it suited it really. I mean, you don't know what I don't think you know what the hell's going on. I used to know. I did a whole backstory to it, and I used to know what their video is all about. But it's obviously very heavily influenced by Truffaut, French cinema, Day for Night. I wasn't a real cinema aficionado, but I saw that film by chance one night late on Channel 4, fell in love with Jacqueline Bisset, and loved the idea of a film that showed the workings of filmmaking, because that was also my passion and how I'd grown up, was on the set with as a clapaloader. So here, the crew were very involved in the film, and at some points in that film, I didn't know whether we were watching, which film we were watching. And that was very exciting. So I thought we'd try and do that in Don't You Want Me, and use all the members of the band as the players within those relationships.
I mean, you mentioned François Truffaut and the film that inspired it, but Truffaut also, he appeared in that film. He did sort of his Hitchcockian little appearance. I was going through that video today to try and find you. And there's one point of someone coming through a door near the end, and the trouble is it's so small, I couldn't work out if it's you or not. Are you in that?
You know what? I can't remember. I remember that I wanted to go that one stage further, like we were trying to do with every video at the time. It was like, okay, we got this idea. It's a good idea. It works. How can we push it even further? And the film within a film idea was good for that song and was working. And I thought at the end, we've got to make it a three-way thing. Even the cutting room is a set. So, you know, if we go film within a film, we're in a film. We turn on the mirror, we see us. We're the final layer. And I think it was a real rushed moment. I seem to remember we did it very last minute, and it probably, I might be there, I can't remember, but I know the cameraman that we used and probably the focus pull and the grip were in that mirror. I don't know whether I was. I can't remember.
I mean, you say that you always wanted to go one step further. Are you a person that is ultimately, I don't know if it's the right word, but bored with what they've done and before, and they want to sort of improve or just take that in a new direction? I don't know if the word is boredom from something, but you know what I mean. It's something that you have a need to develop. Is this been your life in a sense, that the need to keep developing and changing and have new input and output?
It was more I was learning that when I pushed myself, I could often do better, do things that were stronger. And when I really worked hard at them and really applied to them, I could do it. But I was often, you know, I could be quite lazy as well. And I'd be like, that's a good idea, let's do it. And when I did, that's a good idea, let's make it better, it often got better. And I was just learning that really at that time. So I suppose it was just really becoming aware of what you could do. I mean, I was excited by, sometimes I was surprised by ideas. I didn't know where they came from because I didn't go to art school or anything. So I didn't know, you know, you didn't know what would come out of a blank page. And often, you know, total rubbish would come out of a blank page. But, you know, luckily, occasionally some ideas that I really am proud of and felt that they I had no idea where they came from.
I mean, Michael Jackson's Billie Jean is really one of the greatest videos ever made of one of the greatest songs ever made. I mean, you know, just a fantastic, and that, you know, that album was his pinnacle, and that video is absolutely incredible. What was the brief for the video, and what was Jackson's input?
The brief came through the manager and through the producer we had, Simon Fields. It was really that he'd seen Don't You Want Me as one of the earliest videos on MTV. I think he'd watched the beginning of MTV, saw Don't You Want Me, and he liked it because, unlike the other videos, it looked more cinematic. It looked more like a piece of cinema. It felt, we shot it on 35mm, and that was my whole thing, was let's make it really about cinema and be cinematic. And he really liked that. So he wanted Billie Jean to be cinematic. He felt it was a cinematic soundtrack, and he wanted it to be magical in some way. so a little unreal. And the manager said, look, he's really into Peter Pan, that sort of thing. Can it be, you know, a magical story? There was this idea that I used to do brainstorming with Danny Kleiman, who became a big music video director and commercial director and everything. And we kind of brainstormed an idea to do the Midas Touch for a Joan on My Trading video about maybe 5 months earlier. And I still had that idea, and it didn't work for her. It wasn't right for that song. And it was stuck in my head. And so for this song, it felt like, if you know, this is a sort of magical character. He is, in a lot of ways, already a sort of a magical character that is kind of slightly off human in a way. He's got kind of, it's like a cat. He's like, you know, he moves like, not like most humans move. And so it felt like do something like that, where the Midas Touch, where everything this character comes near lights up. And also, when I spoke to him, I asked him, where does it come from? And he said, I just read it in a newspaper, you know, about this character, Billie Jean. And it was a story in a newspaper. So it became about the newspaper as well. He didn't really, there weren't any ideas as such that he put into it. When I got to LA, we'd written and faxed the script, they'd approved the budget, and they wanted to go ahead. But the first thing I did when I got to LA was sit down with him and show him a storyboard of how it would all come together, the video and the frames that we'd be using in the various places. And he just took it all in and just enjoyed how it would be. And then he did suggest another scene, which I thought was a great idea, which was a dancing scene where these characters came alive, but they were, instead of lit up, they were mannequins that came alive and they danced behind him down the street, which I thought was a fantastic idea. And he said, we can get choreography. And I said, that'd be amazing. But when we went to the record company with that idea and the cost implication of that idea, which was only $5,000, I remember, they said, no, you're getting $50,000 to do this video. Well, you're not getting a penny more. That's it. And we couldn't absorb that because actually we weren't making any markup on it anyway. So we couldn't absorb it. So we couldn't do the idea. So I presume that they would tell Michael this. But I think to this day, he thinks I kiboshed the idea. But, obviously he's not with us anymore. But I saw an interview with him where he felt that I'd not let him dance, which I was staggered by, because I had in the storyboards we did, you know, I'd been told that he'd practiced a dance in front of the mirror. So we'd left two choruses for him to dance. So we clearly storyboarded with him, didn't know how to depict him dancing, but they were proper choruses, long chapters of it. So, but I think it was because the record company cleverly swerved the extra money by you blaming me possibly for not wanting to do something that was going to cost extra money, you know? So, but who knows? You know, I don't know the full story of that.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
There was a funny phone call from him the night before we shot, where he rang up, and I was in the Chateau Marmont, and I was rang in the hotel, and he was like, Steve, you know what, let's not do the dancing. And I had already gone. We weren't doing it because we didn't have the money to do it. And I said, okay. And I could have said, you're not doing it, because we weren't allowed to do it. Anyway, we left it at that. And I presume that then they'd sort of come and said, do the dancing on Beat It. Do it on the next, do it from here. Leave the video how it is, you know.
Well, one thing that I find really fascinating about that video, it sort of references to me, and I don't know if that's true, you remember the Jacksons' Can You Feel It, where they're almost gods and they're, you know, you mentioned the Midas Touch, but they're throwing down gold dust over the world. and they're sort of demigods or something in this video, yeah. which Michael was in as well. And also Saturday Night Fever, when John Travolta dances on the lit up dance floor, but different. He's not in charge of the dance floor, whereas Michael was in charge of, you know, the lit dance floor that you'd created for Billie Jean. Were they reference points for you, or is that just coincidence?
I think that's more coincidence. That the Saturday Night Fever, I don't remember being in the thinking at all. The Gold Dust from the videos, maybe some of that sunk in watching it, but I'm not sure. I felt it was, we were trying to do something that you hadn't really seen before. And that was, so the Paving Stones, I didn't really reference of anything. They were just kind of, you know, this is just a piece of magic that I hadn't really seen as far as I could remember. But yeah, you're right. It was Saturday Night Fever, of course. In fact, we did the Adam and the Ants video, the Ant music video, and that was more Saturday Night Fever. That was Adam Ant saying, "Look, I want to do that thing in Saturday Night Fever." When, you know, you got the only, and it was the only underlit dance floor in London at the time. Can't remember the name of the club, but yeah, we managed to get it and shoot it there.
Yeah, I think I went to that club. It was a gay club
in the 80s. Yes.
Yeah, right. No, I can't remember what it was called, and it had some really tacky name. I forgot what it was called. But I remember loving dancing on that dance floor after Saturday Night Fever. But one thing that I think really comes out in both the Jackson video and Madonna's Burning Up, which you did, is their star quality, if I can call it that, where the... When Jackson looks at the camera, when he dances and he looks at the camera in Billie Jean, I mean, there is this amazing connection that you get with him. And when Madonna's, you know, writhing, I think it's, is it on a bridge? And when she's, you know, sort of crawling around on the bridge or whatever and looking at the camera, you get that as well. What do you think these really phenomenal, successful pop stars have that others don't?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Stardust quality. I mean, it's like it's very hard to put your finger on it, but you do see it. I mean, you kind of, when I met Madonna, I felt it was there. When I'm obviously, when I saw Michael in particular on that, in that studio doing his thing, you just have this otherworldly star. David Bowie as well, you know, that isn't, and mere mortals don't really have. It's very hard to describe it, and it's kind of a feeling. And I suppose you know them already because you've known them on TV lit, and often, you know, you meet people and they're not quite what they were on television, actors, everything. And but with certain people like Madonna and Michael Jackson, they were on or off the camera, they were built to be stars.
I mean, another staple of MTV was Take On Me, which is also a phenomenal video with this animation aspect at the start, and at the end, it's creating the sex symbol out of Morton Harkett, in a sense, that he breaks through the glass, the animation figure breaks through the glass, and suddenly there he is in all his sweating, beautiful glory, as it were, and you've created a sex symbol. Was he comfortable with doing that? Because I've met him a few times, interviewed him a few times, and went around his house, and I always felt that he poo-pooed the aspect of his looks because he wanted also to be taken seriously. And as a band, they're really taken seriously today. But at that point, they were more of a sort of pop throwaway band. So was that something that came into the discussion with Take On Me?
No, because it was too early, really. He didn't really know. He hadn't become that sex symbol yet. It wasn't until after the video, really, that he that it all hit and went crazy for him like a teen idol. And that messed with anybody's head. But that hadn't happened yet. So, you know, when we were shooting the video, we were just doing a video. So he wasn't relating that to being a sex symbol because he didn't know. And he was quite young and a bit naive in a way. About girls. I don't think he'd had a real relationship at that point with a girl. And I'm sure he wasn't a virgin, but he didn't feel like he that was necessarily something that was at the front of his mind. He just actually would be happy to, you know, to belt out that song and do it for real. And, you know, even miming to it, he wanted to show that this is what he could do. That's what he was proudest of, was being a singer. And the sex symbol thing then hit on such a big tidal wave. Thousands of screaming girls and front covers of all these magazines. And then it was a big question of, like, this isn't what I was putting out there. This is not what I meant it to be and or ever thought it could become. But it came with the territory.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think that's you know, one of the great power of the pop video was that it could create a star from how they were presented in a video. And I think A-ha really showed that. With Dire Straits, maybe it's a sort of different story because MTV, what I heard, And Money for Nothing launched MTV Europe, obviously, but it was made before. But what I heard was that MTV America were not happy with the original footage, or Dire Straits wanted like a live video, and MTV America wanted something else added to it. And I presume that's why you were brought in, and then the whole thing changed. So could you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was... It was pretty straightforward. I mean, Jeff Aeroff at Warner's just said that Mark's not very keen on videos, but he's written a song, which is a little, in a way, condemnation of MTV and videos. But it is something that he doesn't really appreciate. He thinks that people are listening to the song. It should be pure. It should be about the band playing it. It should be if you have to see it on TV. But the thing that we don't want to do is put images. This was, you know, Dire Straits felt like they didn't want to put images to in any way change the meaning of the purity of the meaning of the song. And naturally, you're going to put images to it. If they're not coming from exactly the same place, then they're not purely what the intentions were and can slightly colour the experience of listening to the song.
I mean, what was interesting about that song in itself was that it was derogatory to MTV. The actual lyrics are derogatory to MTV. So, you know, money for nothing and the chicks are free. And yet MTV took it and made it an MTV song and sort of turned it round in a sense with the line, I want my MTV. And I find that really sort of amazing because it goes from one aspect of them not initially being keen, you making a video that is then compatible for the band and works for MTV, and then MTV taking it completely on board as a sort of positive work for MTV. Was that something that you were aware of at the time?
I straight away you listen to those lyrics, you're like, they really want to promote this, yeah. And they're like, yes, we do, and they were right, you know, because they could say by not saying we're not playing that because that's against us, you know, they made it for them. They made it like it's like fine. These are opinions that we can all have, and you know, and it's fun, and it was kind of, you know, we were exploring new territory with the CGI animation, and so it was very like it felt like part of MTV, that their identity very much came from, which was quite clever early on, these little interstitial videos, short little 5-10 second cuts of claymation or whatever, that with the MTV logo, and they were very clever because they rose MTV as the ceiling to everything, as it gave it, you know, it kept the identity, even though some of these bands were massive and iconic, and it still, you know, they surrounded it with this roof of MTV. So anything, you know, they could get away with anything, even a derogatory song going to number one and giving it MTV Video of the Year as well. It was like, all of it was kind of funny and ironic for me, and you know, I got to know Mark quite well after that, and we did a number of other videos, and it was something that just kind of came at the right time, because it was a time when people were questioning MTV. It was like, what was it, 4 years old or something, and is it still relevant? Is it you know, is it gonna, what's it gonna do next? What's coming? And this came along, so that was that year sorted.
One of the things that you, as an early video director, you became a film director and also a series director. What for you is, you know, film is very collaborative, and I presume series is also incredibly collaborative, and there's much more money in terms of budget, and many more people that are involved in decision-making. Was there more freedom making videos, or is there more freedom for you today when you make a series or you make a film?
Definitely more freedom with videos. I had a period where a few years where, you know, it was literally, I could do whatever within reason, obviously, but whatever I wanted to do, and, you know, with good budgets and things, it was, I was trusted with that because we'd had success with some of it. And, that was freedom I never really got again, although I did some mini series later, Arabian Nights, and after Merlin was quite a big hit, Hallmark Entertainment gave me some sort of blank pages in the same way. They said, what do you want to do? I said, Arabian Nights, let's do Arabian Nights, and they, you know, they came up with $26 million to make it, and really I had no interference, or really was allowed to do what I wanted to do. For a few of those miniseries, it became a bit like a video, where it was like, right, do what you want, do it how you want. And that was great fun, obviously.
I'm a writer, and obviously my voice is in what I write. As a director, what do you look for in a script, and how do you then manage to put yourself into the voice of who's ever written it, so you're actually confined yourself within the script?
I think just understanding where the script's coming from, making sure you're getting the subtext, and get everything you can from the writer, in terms of intentions and whys and wheres, and then I'm going to naturally have ideas, and some of them are slightly different. Some of them take it in a slightly different way, but you know, they expect that. And I think writers are grateful that you're trying to not take away from it, but just to embellish and add to what the idea and what tells the story the best way. So it's, it's usually a good process. I just worked with Ashley, Ashley Farrow. Just worked with Ashley Farrow on around the world in 80 days. And one, you know, great experience, because all he wants to do is make it as good as possible, and enjoys where you take it, when you take it on, and jumps back in and helps carry the load.
One thing about the 80s for me, if I go back to that decade to finish with, one thing about the 80s for me is that it wasn't always a great decade. It was a decade of sexism, racism, misogyny, homophobia, unemployment. You know, there were lots of societal things which were bad in that decade. Yet it had this escapism of music and also music video. Do you think music video played a role in changing societal values?
I'd like to think so. I mean, it was the, you know, a large part of pop culture at the time, and pop culture was influencing people. It was seemed to be influencing the rhythm of the 80s. You know, things got faster somehow from the 70s. It got quicker. Consumption a little bit got quicker, but thinking got quicker and action got a bit quicker. Did it bring the Berlin Wall down? I'd love to think so. I'd love to think it helped the people's gave them, you know, a braver outlet to come and smash the wall down and you know, break through and break out. But I don't know. That's for historians, I suppose, to ponder over if they even go there.
Well, I think it did as well. And I just want to say you were a massive part of that, a massive part of my 20s, which was during the 80s with these music videos, and also someone who worked for MTV. And yeah, you're still here today. You're still making great series and films. And I really appreciate your creative input into our world. So Steve Barron, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve Blaine.
And that's it for the interview with director Steve Barron. I hope you enjoyed it. His book, which you'll find from the link I've posted, Egg and Chips and Billie Jean, is all about the 80s if you'd like to read more. So I'll see you with more History Makers soon.
You're listening to Pop, the History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Selling your car to Carvana is as easy as...
As easy as pie?
Sure. All you have to do is enter your license plate or VIN.
As easy as a stroll in the park.
Okay, then just answer a few questions and you'll get a real offer in seconds.
As easy as singing!
Why not? Schedule a pickup or drop-off and Carvana will pay you that amount right on the spot.
As easy as playing guitar.
Actually, I find that kind of difficult. But selling your car to Carvana is as easy as...
Can be.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to get an instant offer today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.